Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Roper Rapport podcast in association with Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. My name is Rich Spate and I'm joined this afternoon down the line by George Ellick from the Not In The Top 20 podcast. Also, you will have seen him on Sky Sports, on Quest Highlight Show, an expert on all things EFL related, but is also an Oxford United fan, and obviously Sunderland have got the game on Saturday afternoon at the Stadium of Light with Oxford United. So how are you this afternoon, George?
Yeah, I'm good. Good, thanks, Rich. I was a bit disappointed when the game got rearranged to Saturday because when, as you say, I do a fair bit of work on weekends. So when the game is called off because international call-ups, I was looking forward to a nice Tuesday night trip to Sunderland, which I can do, and staying up there for the night and all this. But sadly, I can't make it on Saturday. So I'm going to have to listen in, hopefully hoping for a good result.
Well, this is a game in hand for both teams, and both teams are doing reasonably well in the league so far this season. But there's a lot of change of foot at Oxford United at the minute. I noticed when I was looking into the background to this game, there's a takeover going on. How's that progressing?
No one knows is the short answer. I think there are some similarities in terms of what's going on at Sunderland and at Oxford, where I know that the Sunderland takeover obviously went through with Carol Louis Dreyfus taking ownership of the club, but there seems to be some question marks as to exactly who owns what percent of the club and other bits and bobs. At Oxford, the first murmurs of this takeover really started to gather pace about a year ago with, the guys who are taking over, Alan Bakri, Horst Geiker, Eric Tohir, they've held roles at the club in kind of a director post for a few years. They're not necessarily new faces, but talk of them taking over from Tiger, who's our current owner and chairman, started to surface about a year ago. From everything that I've heard, it's been agreed for a very long time. The only reason why it hasn't been rubber stamped is purely because it's with the EFL and Rick Parry, I think it is in a massively positive mood, has clearly come into the EFL and decided that it's going to be much harder for people to come in and buy EFL football clubs. And I think the hoops that they have to jump through mean it takes a bit longer. So I would say that probably, even though Oxford is still owned by Tiger, I have a feeling some of the investment in terms of the playing staff has probably come from the prospective new owners. The wealth of the personal wealth of the guys combined who are coming in is vast. Not that necessarily due to FFP, you can always invest as much as you want into the club. But yeah, I think bright times on the horizon. A lot of Oxford fans have been excited about the takeover, but there's definitely people are getting quite weary of the lack of news and the lack of a concrete answer. Because crucially, and this may not interest Sunderland fans as much as the on-pitch stuff, there's a hope and a desire that when the takeover does go through, there's going to be an answer to the stadium situation, because the Kassam Stadium is still owned by Firoz Kassam, who is Oxford's previous owner, who is not very popular at the club, who charges the club a fairly extortionate rate. And the hope is that because of the personal wealth of these guys coming in and their willingness to seemingly invest in Oxford as a place and a community as much as the football club, they're going to be looking to build a new stadium for Oxford to move into in future seasons, which would make everyone over the moon. It'd be nice to have four stands in a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. I mean, I saw Bakri interviewed on the BBC. Seems a really articulate, intelligent guy. He was the Indonesian representative at the COP26 conference in Glasgow, the climate change conference. And he was talking extensively about the kind of ambitions to be an environmentally sustainable club, and that the new ground is going to be hopefully, built with the community interest at heart and with kind of environmental concerns at the fore. Is that something that's going to be, important for Oxford United and the community in Oxford as well in the local area?
Yeah, I think, it can only be a good thing. I'd be lying if I said that one of the five reasons Oxford fans are most excited about the prospective takeover is because of the sustainability aspect of it. But as someone myself who I think it's the right way for a football club to go, and it is important. As you say, they are impressive people. I think in my role as somebody who covers the EFL kind of journalistically, I guess, in the podcast, is that we always approach new owners with suspicion before being proven otherwise, because so often we see people coming into clubs saying all the right things, and then either through incompetence or something more sinister, that changes very quickly. So, that they are impressive. I mean, Bakary especially. Eric Tohir has owned Inter Milan previously. He was the owner of DC United when Wayne Rooney signed for the club. So, he's not somebody who's coming into Oxford and investing in Oxford for the first time with his eyes closed. He's twice looked to invest in clubs with a much more sizable bankroll than Oxford in the past. So hopefully it'll be okay. But as ever, even though, that BBC Radio Oxford interview with Anand Bakary was impressive. And his Wikipedia page is very impressive. I don't need to tell Sunderland fans that sometimes when an owner seems too good to be true, quite often it can unravel pretty quickly.
Absolutely. Healthy scepticism is always the way. And you mentioned the ownership kind of breakdown structure at Sunderland. I think once the Red and White Army's minutes of their meeting with the board through the structure dialogue comes out, we might have an answer to that. It was certainly something that was on the agenda, and maybe when this podcast comes out, those meeting minutes will be out there. But let's turn to footballing matters, shall we? Because on the pitch, the plan from Bakary is to get Oxford promoted within 2 years, is what he stated. And they're going all right at the minute. I mean, the recent run of form, I look back over the last couple of months of results, and there were some really strong performances, really strong results, which have left Oxford on 32 points in 8th place, but only 3 points behind Sunderland and on the same amount of games. Are Oxford fans generally pleased with the performance so far this season?
Yes, I would say so. Like many fans of football clubs, you can get frustrated by some of the those who aren't so happy normally shout the loudest. And there seems to be some, at least a couple of weeks ago when the results weren't as good, some suggestions that maybe the manager had taken us as far as he could. I always find it amazing that, we've reached the playoffs 2 consecutive seasons in a row, and some fans seem to focus more on the fact that we didn't win the playoffs than the fact we were there at all, which, I would say is a positive. And if we continue to finish in the top 6, eventually we're gonna get it right and go up. So, as is often the case with Carl Robinson's side, there is a feeling that we have done very well and we've played some great football in patches, and there's just been a couple of areas where we could have improved. Looking back to the beginning of September, we were 1-0 up at halftime away at AFC Wimbledon, and I think we were possibly top of the league or second at halftime in kind of the live table. We lost that game 3-1. We then drew 0-0 with Wickham, went to Cheltenham and lost 1-0, and then drew 1-1 at home to Gillingham. Now, it's that run of form against four teams, with the exception of Wickham, three teams who we probably would have expected to at least take a point. But not winning any of those four is probably what's cost us our chance of right now being up there with Rotherham and Wigan right towards the top end of the table. Our performances in isolation at times have been very good. And what I would say is I think now is probably quite a bad time to play Oxford, because we had what should have been a kind of a week of hell, I guess, where we were up at Wigan on the Saturday morning, and suddenly had a raft of positive COVID tests. The game was then postponed. In midweek, on the Tuesday, we hosted Fleetwood. We had 13 players out. We had to get an emergency keeper in Connor Truman from Birmingham, who drove straight to the game from Birmingham. Carl Robinson calling in a favour from Lee Bowyer. And I was there and I was expecting the worst. When you have 13 players out, you've got your right back playing centre back, you've only got 4 outfield substitutes. Even though Fleetwood came into it at a pretty low ebb, I didn't anticipate it was going to be easy. But we completely blew them off the park. And Robinson said after the game how you know, it was testament to the players that we've got, that we played some of the best football we probably played, not just this season, but in his tenure at the Kassam Stadium in that first 20 or 30 minutes. So that kind of galvanised us. And then we had the visit of Rotherham on the Saturday. And I'm personally of the belief that Rotherham could easily win this league by about 10 points come the end of the season. I think they are just better than every other team. And a lot of the underlying numbers, a lot of kind of the data points from last season pegged them as a mid-table championship side who basically got the bad rubber, the green, consistently last season and probably shouldn't have been relegated. And they've kept the majority of those players and added a couple of key ones as well. So going into that, none of our players were back, the same squad to choose from. And even though Rotherham were by far the better team and hit the woodwork twice, it was a proper backs to the wall, you know, everything against us, battling 0-0 draw. And it feels like the whole club has, yeah, as I say, been galvanised by a week where we were down to our bare bones. We picked up 4 points. We've managed to do what not many teams have done recently and keep Rotherham at bay and not concede a goal. So we're unsure at the moment exactly how many, if everybody's going to be back. Robinson has spoken in the press about the fact that some of the players who had COVID have bounced back and been completely fine. Some of them have been very ill, so you'd probably anticipate those who've been poorly are probably not going to be able to be fit for this one. But certainly it feels like, even though it was only 4 points taken, the last week has maybe just brought the fan base, the manager, the players all together in a bit of an us against them mentality that's got us some points.
I think that doesn't bode well for Sunderland at the weekend. I mean, the comparison with our game against Rotherham recently, when we got absolutely scudded by, as you say, clearly the best team in the league,
yeah,
at least at this point, certainly. That was really impressive and that did stand out. I mean, a 0-0 wouldn't usually stand out, but against Rotherham, it certainly does. So just looking back a little bit to the start of the season and the summer signings that were made by Carl Robinson, seemed to be loans were the order of the day. And we've got Herbie Kane and White from Cardiff. Herbie Kane from Barnsley and White from Cardiff. Are they the two kind of standout acquisitions in the summer?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, on paper, I'd probably say so. Gavin White is a player who made his name at Oxford. We signed him, I think, from Bohemians in Northern Ireland, and he was brilliant for us for 18 months. And then ended up, we bought him for next to nothing and sold him for £1 million-odd to Cardiff, where it didn't really work out for him. They completely misused him as a player. He was often playing at right wing back. You know, he's an aggressive attacking forward, really. He can either play out wide on the right hand side, or he can play up top, as he's been doing recently. And he, you know, it was incredibly exciting to get back a player who, when we sold him not that long ago, it felt like he was destined for big things. He hasn't really impressed this season. He doesn't look like the same player. He looks a bit short of confidence, which maybe is what happens when you go to a championship side and you struggle to break through, and you're often played out of position. He has looked better recently. He started playing through the middle in the second half against Fleetwood. He was a massive threat with his pace in behind. But I think Oxford fans would be, you know, pretty disappointed that a guy who was able to dominate at this level for us just a couple of seasons ago isn't really showing that form at the moment. With Herbie Kane, that was more a case of, I mean, Carl Robinson said he was just a player who came available right at the end of the window, who we weren't looking to sign. But as soon as he became available, everyone was so surprised that he was able to come to us, that they move very quickly to sign him. And he is a quality footballer. He's somebody, his array of passing is too good for League One level. I personally think his best position is either in a sitting two or on the right-hand side of a three, but he's currently playing at the base of a three because Alex Gorin, the former Sunderland player, is got a long-term injury. He's done his ACL, which is fine because Kane's passing ability from that role is still very good, but he is tenacious, but he's not quite the same physical specimen, let's say. He's not quite as quick across the cover of the ground. He's not quite as good in the tackle as Gorin. So we're often a little bit susceptible on the break when Kane does play there, and he's going to have to for the foreseeable. But those two signings, certainly on paper, look pretty good. But probably the key ones, Jordan Thornley has offered a brilliant balance on the left-hand side of our two centre-backs. He, you know, getting a left-footed centre-back is never easy at League One level, especially on a permanent transfer, although there is an option for him to do so. Obviously, Sunderland looking to get a 17-year-old kid in from City in order to provide that balance. So he's probably been the key one. But, I mean, our squad, as I say, has been good enough for the last couple of years to finish in the top six. So it was never going to need massive changes. Although I do think a lot of Oxford fans would want there to be a striker certainly signed in January, because at the moment we're so reliant on Matt Taylor for goals, which is fine because he's very good at scoring them. But at the same time, you want that other option.
Yeah, the goal scoring threats, I think, are pretty clear. Mm. If you look at the stats, we've got, I think, is Taylor on 8 so far this season in all competitions, and Henry's on 6 in 17. So there's goals in the team. And I think Sunderland will have their eyes open to all of those threats, and I'm really anticipating, you know, a really challenging game on Saturday. And I wanted your perspective. You've spoken at length and have praised in some of your media appearances Sunderland's kind of new style and new way of playing, and the way that, you know, our recruitment has changed, and the kind of the quality of players that we've brought in. Obviously, we've had a bit of up and down form since you made some of those comments that we were sharing around. What's your assessment of kind of maybe why there's been a drop off in Sunderland's performance, and you know, what your expectations are as a fan, as an Oxford fan, of coming up to the stage of my life and the challenges that we're going to pose to Oxford?
I mean, as a fan, I feel more confident going into this game than I have coming up to the Stadium of Light for a long time. I think you're there to be got at the moment, because the form has quite clearly dipped. I'm sure Lee Johnson would point squarely at the injuries and the absentees and say that's why it's happened. I would, you know, and I hope, because I always feel bad saying this, because I've got a feeling he doesn't like it, but I would say that the manager, in terms of this is true to form, you know, Lee Johnson goes through spells where his teams look unbeatable, and then he'll go through spells where his teams look very, very poor. The reason for that, I don't know. We see often with manager profiles that certain managers have characteristics that follow them around in their career. Carl Robinson himself is a very streaky manager too, and I feel like we might be playing you in the middle of one of Streaky Lee's poor streaks, because even in the two games that you've won, against Ipswich and against Cambridge, I don't think you've been very good. I think the performances haven't been great. I thought Ipswich, until the first goal, looked the better side, and the penalty decision was a bizarre one. And then even against Cambridge, it's an own goal, then it's a wonder strike from Broadhead, which is obviously a great hit, but again, he didn't create a great deal against them. So yeah, I mean, I still massively maintain what I said about the club being in a better position. You know, you look at the wage bill now compared to what it was when you first came down to League One level. The quality hasn't massively changed in your squad, yet you are being run as a sustainable, proper League One football club built to last, which is great. I think the decision to bring in Christian Speakman is a great one. I think Lee Johnson is a fantastic League One manager as well, who will take Sunderland on an upward trajectory. So there's no, you know, this isn't me in any way going back on what I've said, but I think injuries have played their part. And at this current moment in time, and you know, this is something that the data supports as well, I think Sunderland look to me well short of a kind of top four, top five team in their current guys. That's not to say that you won't finish up there at the end of the season if the performances improve.
Yeah, certainly. And I think January is going to be really important. Yeah. I heard Speakman talking a few weeks ago, and it was already clear that they were very much planning further recruitment in January, and the injuries that have been kind of piling up over the last few weeks, I think, are going to make that ever more urgent. I think losing, obviously, Aidan McGeady long-term, losing Luke O'Nine long-term are going to shape a lot of the recruitment. But even before they went down, and even before probably we lost all of the left backs in the senior squad, there were probably some improvements that need to be made. I think I could see there being 4, 5, even one more coming in January, because there are a few areas that we do need a bit more depth. But overall, one of the things that's come up on very many pods is just the strength of League One this year. And obviously, with your kind of not on the top 20 hat on, and your overall kind of broad view of the EFL, is that something that kind of is borne out by the data, or just your kind of your general observing of the standard of League One? Because for me, over the 4 years, there's been almost a quite a visible transformation just in the way that football is played at tier three?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a far, far better iteration of League One than we've seen since Sunderland have been in the league. And it promised to be that, to be fair. I think at the start of the season, anyone who follows the leagues knew that, you know, the teams who come down from the Championship are always going to be strong. So we had Rotherham, who we knew were going to be very good, Wickham too. And then you look at the sides who have had recent takeovers. So they've had new owners to try and freshen things up and to bring in more investment. So there you've got Sunderland, you've got Ipswich, you've got Wigan. You've then got teams who consistently battle towards the top end of the table who haven't managed to get up. Oxford, Portsmouth, MK Dons recently doing really, really good stuff as well. And I forgot to mention the biggest of the lot in Sheffield Wednesday, who came down last season as well. So even before the season started, it was clear. And what often frustrates me again as a fan is that you start this season in League One, and I reckon there are seven or eight clubs who are telling you that a top three finish is a must. That can't happen. So does that mean, by definition, you've got four or five managers who fail? Because that seems a bit unfair when the expectations are so high. But that's what we've got here. And then you add to the mix a club like Plymouth Argyle, who I think we had predicted to finish 22nd in our pre-season predictions, who started the season incredibly well. And then Ryan Lowe, they've got a manager who I'm sure is destined to manage at much higher level than League One. And even though they've come unstuck in their last couple of games, there's been enough in those games for me to show that they weren't just a fad. You know, that wasn't just a bit of a freak occurrence, them being towards the top. They are going to improve. And whether they finish in the top three or not, I don't know. But they are a team to take seriously. So, yeah, I mean, it hasn't been a massive surprise to me to see this. I think probably the only surprise has been that some of those teams who we thought would be very good, Ipswich being the obvious one, given the quality of player that they brought in, and Paul Cook, a manager who I thought would be very, very good at managing this side. But also, you know, maybe Portsmouth, maybe Sunderland, maybe Oxford. A few of these sides showing some fairly obvious early weaknesses in games, which have enabled certainly Rotherham and probably Wigan to show that they are clear towards the top end. So, and also you add to that, teams who get promoted from League Two generally have a pretty good record in their first season at League One as well. And Cheltenham and Bolton have both shown already that they are at the very worst mid-table sides. So it's definitely better. I think, you know, normally teams who come down from the Championship have a very good record of bouncing back up. And that hasn't quite been the case as much as usual in recent years, which is why we're seeing Ipswich, Sunderland, these teams staying down there. But yeah, I think it's becoming a harder and harder league to get out of. There's no denying that.
It certainly is. And everyone's desperate as well. And obviously Sunderland fans, I don't think ever expected to be down here 5 years ago.
No.
And it still hurts,
yeah,
to be. But I do think that's a welcome kind of dose of kind of perspective and realism, in that there is just so many competitive teams and playing decent football as well, and that's always, I mean, as a football fan, it's always good to see.
Yeah,
except
for maybe one club in Wickham who do it their
own
way.
I was just about to say,
but all credit to them. You know, I think it's they do what they have to do in order to punch above their weight. And I'm a massive, you know, I've said when you hired Lee Johnson, that I think Gareth Ainsworth would have been a magnificent appointment. Yeah. And I'm not necessarily convinced that his style of football at Wickham will always be the way that he looks to play. I think he is just aware that he has to elevate his side to a certain level, and that's the way to do it, yeah, when he's Wickham manager.
Certainly. So, again, slightly just kind of taking our gaze a little bit further out and looking at the game overall, because we've recently had Tracy Croucher's fan-led review of football come out, which obviously has big implications across the pyramid, but is very much focused on making the EFL overall more sustainable, financially sustainable, and giving us fans a bigger voice, a bigger say, a more security in our kind of our fandom, and that our clubs, hopefully, if the recommendations are implemented, will be less likely to disappear from underneath us, with things like the kind of the golden share and possibly securing that kind of link between football clubs and where they play. For you, what were the most kind of important recommendations that came out of that? Was it just the whole concept of an independent regulator, or is it some of the kind of finer detail that actually might have the bigger long-term implications?
I think all of it. I mean, I should say here that Ali and I are doing a 15-minute segment on this on Friday night on Sky Sports Football after the Fulham-Bournemouth game. So we're kind of very much in research phase at the moment as to how we want that to go. So it's something I'm looking into a lot at the moment. And I think, you know, a couple of things are just obviously good throughout the pyramid, where the golden share is, you know, it's implemented very well at the moment by Brentford. It is an ability to ensure that no matter who the owner is, no matter what their intentions are, certain parts of a club's history and heritage has to be protected. And that has to be a good thing. And I would, you know, anybody who argues otherwise can only have ill intentions. And the same can probably be said of the shadow board as well, which is another idea which would see a board of fans effectively being consulted on all important matters at the club, with a need to consult them twice a year at least, I think is the recommendation. So all that stuff has got to be good, and I think it's almost a bit of a waste of time talking about them too much beyond just explaining them, because I'm sure they will be implemented. The bigger issues, and the one that is the most interesting, where you've got to kind of choose your words quite well, it is around both the increased transfer levy that would be paid by Premier League clubs to the EFL, up I think from 4% to 10% for any players bought from foreign leagues or from the Premier League, and also the independent regulator for English football, IREF, which would basically oversee all football governance in this country. And those are the issues that unsurprisingly have got Premier League execs' backs up, and some of the rhetoric that we're seeing from Premier League execs is bordering on the ridiculous. You know, we have Karen Brady in a certain red top saying that, comparing it to North Korea. Got Kinnear from Leeds in his programme notes calling it, kind of comparing it to Mao policies. I mean, it's there's obviously like a very deliberate attempt to use language which will get an emotional reaction from fans, which I mean, they're straw man arguments that we should be able to see through it very, very comfortably, because at the moment we are seeing a system where clubs are basically self-governed and they own the leagues that they play within. And I saw Against League Three, who's a very good Twitter account about all of this stuff, compared it to being able to ask a child if they want a salad or cake for dinner. Effectively, you know, you're basically enabling the clubs to make all the decisions based on how they want to behave, and getting a reaction. You know, we heard Christian Perslow on Talk Sport say that all good things in English football are in the Premier League, which is a remarkable quote. And crucially, seeing these figures, these executives from the Premier League, so quickly coming out to argue against these recommendations has to be the biggest signifier so far of how important that they are, because it is showing, you know, it's basically people panicking because the power and the money is being taken away from them. And again, in I think it's, what's his, Angus Kinnear's programme notes at Leeds, he says that just to look at the English pyramid, you will see teams that were in existence 20 years ago still existing, as if that is the bare minimum of health within the pyramid, is the fact that these teams still exist. He only has to look back 4 or 5 years at the club that he worked at in Aston Villa, who, due to the unsustainable nature of parachute payments, nearly went out of business themselves. Angus Kinnear at Leeds, you know, went through absolute financial hardship through overspending. They want to completely redo how the owners and directors test is done, which is great, again, because we've seen so many malicious owners come into clubs, or incompetent owners come into clubs in recent times. Tracy Crouch said, you know, there should be a thing where if you're a convicted criminal, you shouldn't be able to own a club. I mean, that seems fairly obvious. I think it's important to provide a balance to this conversation. I need to iron out how I'm going to do it live on TV on Friday night and make sure that I don't have any lawyers knocking on my door. But it's important that balance is provided, because at the moment, the annoying thing is that naturally, because the money is in the Premier League, it means that in this debate that is now taking place, despite the great work of Tracy Crouch, she's going on many, many podcasts. We're trying to get her onto our podcast. She's done a Q&A on LBC. She's been on Five Live and all this other stuff. most of the articles that we're reading and most of the stuff that's getting airtime at the moment is Premier League driven narrative, yeah. and hopefully we can provide something of a balance to that.
And you dig down into the report from the review as well, and further down the chapters, there are some really, really important issues actually dealt with in there around like player welfare, yeah. around the women's game, around kind of equalities more generally and how that's done across football. So it's not just those headline things around the distribution of money, which are obviously really, really important, and maybe given a bit of, you know, a little bit of balance. One thing, you know, we do have to be careful not to, you know, shoot the golden goose, you know.
Of course.
In terms of the Premier League. But I don't think the Premier League is short on sponsorship money. It's just had its huge deal with, or deals with American broadcasters come through. So there's a fair few quid still floating around and they're still able to spend on transfers.
I think that's the key point. And the other thing we should say is, because a lot of the you know, the stuff that is driven here is around how much the Premier League already pay the EFL. Well, a massive majority of the figures you'll see that come into that are parachute payments. So they're going effectively to three relegated clubs. It's not equally shared throughout the pyramid at all. And as you mentioned, the increased transfer levy from whatever 4% it is to 10%, whilst it would impact Premier League clubs, of course. I mean, the idea that it's a radical shift and it's going to massively damage the Premier League's ability to attract the best players or whatever is nonsense. And it obviously would. I mean, and if it did bring a competitive balance a little bit closer together, because the rate we're going at, the divide between the Championship and the Premier League is going to get ridiculous. You only have to look at the Premier League and the clubs who get relegated and how they perform afterwards to see that. And I think the other important thing is, you are right, I mentioned the golden shares and the shadow board. Tracy Crouch also recommended that there's a whole new report on the women's game, which would be fantastic. Player welfare is clearly an important thing, as is a push for equality in all forms of the game at clubs. You know, you look at the issues surrounding cricket at the moment, and you know, we need to make sure that our sports environments in the community and at clubs is wholly inclusive. But let's not get ourselves in a situation where the Premier League stakeholders are saying, okay, well, you can have all that stuff, that's all great, but this is the things we're taking off the table, because it shouldn't be it shouldn't be a negotiation between the different recommendations.
Definitely. And that involves fans across all clubs, across all divisions, from, you know, your Liverpool's, Man United's and Man City's and Chelsea's, down to Rotherham's and Rochdale's and Oxford's and Sunderland's and Tranmere's, all sticking to our guns and making sure that our elected representatives, whether they're Tory, Labour, Lib Dem, whatever, are on message with this. They all had it in their manifestos that they would do this, and the time needs to be set aside to legislate properly on it and make sure that the law sitting behind whatever independent regulator comes out is robust and doesn't get lobbied away and get chipped away by the vested interests of the multi-billionaires right at the top of the game. So final thoughts ahead of Sunderland v Oxford on Saturday then, George. You're expecting an Oxford win, I guess. And I'm not going to ask you for a score prediction.
Don't put words in my mouth. I'm interested to see what team you put out. I mean, I don't know when this is going to go out, but what team you put out tonight in the EFL trophy, because if you are down to bare bones and therefore you have to start a fair few of the players who are going to start on Saturday, I would be very happy to see that, given we have the week off. But without knowing our team and who's going to be back available after the COVID issues, it's hard to know. So I'm going to say what I always say when you guys invite me on, because it's normally right when we play, 1-1.
Over the seasons has been a really good prediction for Sunderland. This year we're not drawing too many games.
I know.
So I think it is a really sensible prediction. I thank you for your time this afternoon, George. I know you're busy, and best of luck for the rest of the season, apart from obviously the games against Sunderland and any playoff that we may feature in at some point. Let's hope not. Let's hope we both go up automatically and there's no such dramas. But cheers for your time. And just a message to our listeners. Obviously, we're in the middle of our Christmas fundraising appeal for Sunderland London Community Soup Kitchen. We've got loads of content on the website, loads of interesting articles about where the money is spent, about some of the issues that Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen are dealing with in our community in Sunderland. They do some amazing work. We've also got next weekend, we're doing a 24-hour Twitter space. It's going to be very challenging. How on earth me and the other hosts are going to stay awake for that long, I have no idea. There'll be plenty of coffee involved. Hoping to get loads of really interesting guests from across the football world, loads of people with Sunderland connections dropping in and chatting to us. I think we're also going to do a karaoke on the Friday night. So plenty to look forward to then. Loads of ways to get involved, but please do donate. The link will be in the podcast description. And thanks very much for your time. Ta-ra.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.